last week, an awful accident in the lower Shabelle region of Somalia, where 27 people were killed, the majority of whom were children, is a daily reminder for all of us working in the sector of how important our work is. For people who live in those kind of contaminated areas, the daily pressure that is constantly in the back of their mind about whether they or one of their children would have an accident is indeed a tragedy. And if you imagine we advertised that there were landmines in Geneva, would people still send their children to school on that day? Would they go to work? Probably not. But in 64 countries around the world, people have to go to work and they have to carry on their daily lives with the threat of an accident. And for sure, this is a burden that we don't think civilians should have to carry. And we're doing all that we can to put a stop to that.
Now, in terms of the working conditions of deminers, with advances in technology, has the job of deminers changed? Has it become safer or has it largely stayed the same? And what is the impact of this difficult job on the health, including the mental health of the people who do it?
What a minefield looks like in 2023 as opposed to 1983 is largely the same. The threat that we're addressing is largely the same, but the way that we are carrying out the demining is improved hugely. In the olden days of demining, in the 1980s and early 90s in Afghanistan, where humanitarian mine action was born, people were wearing just sunglasses that they could buy in a supermarket. Nobody was wearing ballistic clothing. But now we have international mine action standards. I am the chair of the IMAS review board, and we constantly review mine action standards, and many of those are related to the safety of deminers, including the clothing that they have to wear. They wear a visor, they wear ballistic jackets, including the way that they carry out demining, how far apart they have to be from each other so that if one deminer activates a mine, he wouldn't injure his colleague. The sector is highly regulated and we see less and less accidents. To answer your question of the impact on the mental health of deminers, a lot of deminers are former combatants. And a lot of them, I mean, certainly in Afghanistan where I worked for a long time, they've been deminers for 30 years. So they have a different attitude to risk than I might have as a civilian living in New York City. But without doubt, they're brave and they make a commitment and a contribution that could threaten their own lives.
Next week, Geneva will be hosting a major meeting of the Mine Action community. Why is it important that the community comes together at this moment?
The theme of the meeting of the National Directors and UN Advisors meeting next week is Mine Action Cannot Wait. And we chose that theme to really emphasize the urgency of our work while we are looking at some places that have had decades of contamination, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam. So the impact that I was talking about earlier is generational. So you would have a grandfather and a father and a son who are all impacted by mines in, for example, Cambodia. So to really push the point that we need to finish the job in those countries and face with new contamination in countries like Ukraine, like Myanmar, like Yemen. Each year we come together, we are reinvigorating each other, we bring new solutions to the table. There will be a plenary on innovation in mine action that will include how we can use drone technology, how to detect minimum metal mines. We'll also be looking at the climate change and the impact of climate change on mine clearance operations, which we're having, for example, in Sudan, in South Sudan, increasingly long rainy periods, which means we have less time to do mine action because we can't access areas that are in flooding. But then also flipping the coin and looking at the environmental impact of mine clearing, because when we use machines, we dislodge the topsoil and that's really difficult to rebuild. So we'll be looking at those issues and many other topics, including the role that mine action has to play in supporting durable solutions for displaced persons.
The latest emergency, you said, is Ukraine. And right now, after the destruction of the Kakhovka Dam, there is a danger posed by mines floating downstream with the floodwaters. What can you say about this latest threat?
Well, of course, the primary consequence of flooding is the potential displacement of mines, leading to areas that were previously safe having suspected contamination. The floodwater has to disrupt the ground underneath it. So in countries where there are seasonal flooding and it's not a violent event, then what happens is the floodwaters come up and the floodwaters go down and the mines remain where they are. But in situations like the flooding of the dam, where there is huge displacement of actual soil, then this is a problem. Generally, mines are plastic and they float, so when the water subsides, they're on the surface. But of course, there'll be a huge amount of other flood debris, which will be challenging. I myself was working in Sri Lanka in the time of the tsunami, and there were a lot of Sri Lankan army posts that had protective minefields on the coast, and we had exactly the same thing. The tsunami wave came in and just washed all those mines inland, and certainly they were problematic to find. Well, previously they'd been laid in very meticulously laid minefields, and after that they were very randomly spread, and it takes more time to find mines that are not in a pattern. So it's a challenge, adding to an already huge challenge in Ukraine.
And we know that more than 20% of Ukraine's territory is mined, which does have devastating effects for civilians, for agriculture. Given your experience of other conflicts, how long will it take to clear those mines after the fighting stops? And do you think this will be another protracted emergency?
We don't know that 20% of Ukraine is contaminated. It may be true that 20% of regions have, but this doesn't mean that the whole region will be contaminated. So the underlying principle with when reporting contamination is to err on the side of caution and to record suspected hazardous areas as mined. But what usually happens, and I have seen in Afghanistan, in South Sudan, in Cambodia, is the actual contamination is actually less. So, yeah, let's hope that that is also the case. The presence of minefields is largely associated with the frontline fighting in Ukraine, which do not cover 20% of the country. And in other regions, the contamination is probably cluster munitions or other general battlefield ordnance. And clearing this kind of contamination is much faster, maybe 10 to 20 times faster than clearing minefields. Your question about how long clearance will take, this depends totally on when the fighting stops and the effort, the subsequent effort that goes into clearing the contamination. It's true, this is a protracted conflict and there's been a wide range of weaponry used, so it probably will take thousands of deminers. Just to cast my mind back to when I was in Afghanistan 10 years ago, there was 10,000 deminers working there. So yes, it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of machinery to clear, for example, the rubble. But it's too early at this moment. Until the fighting stops, until we can assess and survey the exact clearance, how long it's going to take is going to be a difficult prediction. But I guess the ray of hope is we used to talk 3 decades ago about a 1,000-year problem. But what we have shown in those countries that have been heavily contaminated, Cambodia, Mozambique, Angola, they are now approaching completion, or they're close to it. We should attack it with hope.